Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
My son's fourth birthday might be a little better today. My daughter turns one tomorrow, so somebody's going to have a heck of a birthday. Plus a heck of a birthday. I mean, you know. At the end of the day, I'm fully blessed to be a part of this team, fully blessed to be a part of this organization. When you come in and you get drafted, come from the West Coast, you have this vision of grandeur. My dad played for the Vikings for 13 years. I always said I want to be the same team for the rest of my career. And this gives me an opportunity to extend to however long we go.
When his career is over, we...
Good morning. This is RP3 and Company. Right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, that's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Give us a call, our co-equipment hotline. 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We got a lot to get to today. We're going to be talking everything from Houston Astros baseball to women's World Cup record-setting match. Oh, yeah. We're going to cover it all, including the Pelicans.
No!
We promise not to do that 13 times, though.
The show's not long enough.
So we'll be covering all the bases, including the New Orleans Pelicans front office whining and dining. They brought out the big checkbook yesterday. They took Zion Williamson to a fancy place in New Orleans. We'll get to all that. But this hour, it's going to be Saints heavy. And we're going to start things off with Cam Jordan getting that money. Deal is apparently worth $52 million. Locks him up with the franchise through the 2023 season. He's coming off a year where he had 12 sacks, 49 total tackles, and a fumble recovery. He is the heart and soul of that defense. He is the leader. You could argue that Cam Jordan, a former first-round pick, he was part of the same draft class as Mark Ingram was, coming out of Cal after having a couple of seasons where he didn't really make that big of an impact, but he slowly came into a form of becoming a Pro Bowl and All-Pro pass rusher for the New Orleans Saints. You could make the argument that he is the second biggest leader, most important leader on this team behind Drew Brees. Now that Mark Ingram's gone. And the Saints, somehow, Mickey Loomis and Jeff Ireland work that free agent contract extension magic like only they know how. How this team is able to afford to give Cam a $52 million contract, a three-year extension where reportedly more than $40 million of it is guaranteed. I don't know how they do it. It's some type of crazy sorcery, but they get the job done. And now you have the leader of your defense, and you also have the guy that's going to be the leader of your team once Drew Brees retires. You got him locked up now. He's been one of your biggest and most consistent players from jump. Like I said, early on, it was so weird because both him and Mark Ingram's careers were very similar. Because they both were slow to make an impact. Both drafted in that same draft class. 2011, first rounder. And it took him a little while. The big fella, number 94, as you heard, a Minnesota native. 6'4", 287 pounds. He was the 24th overall pick there back in 2011 out of Cal. And this is what he's done. After a kind of sluggish start to his career, as I said, he's been to four Pro Bowls, 2013, 15, 17, 18. He was a first-team All-Pro in 2017, a second-team All-Pro in 2018. So this guy is a four-time Pro Bowler and a two-time All-Pro. He's not 30 yet either. When we think of Cameron Jordan, we think of him being a little bit older now. He's actually only 29 years old as of right now. So this contract will likely lock him up for the remainder of his career. So the Saints are going to get prime Cam Jordan. In his career, he has more than 400 tackles, and he has 71.5 sacks and 10 forced fumbles. Heartbeat of this team on the defensive side of the ball. And now you have him locked up. As a diehard Saints fan, I know you were immersed into the Women's World Cup yesterday, Cody Schutz. Okay? You were. You were immersed in the first day of the Women's World Cup.
Well, the first day for the United States.
So the first day of the Women's World Cup.
I watched the England and Scotland game.
When you hear the news.
God save the Queen.
God save the Queen. When you hear the news, I'm not for sure Scotland's all that thrilled about God save the Queen. But that's
it's weird because those two countries in the Olympics, they compete as Great Britain.
Right.
And then in the World Cup, it's Scotland versus England. So it's just one of those stories inside the story, you know.
How do you feel about Cam Jordan getting the contract extension? You got him locked up now throughout his prime. Leader of that defense isn't going anywhere. He's getting paid. And you lock him up now long term. You gave him a nice extension. How do you feel as a Saints fan today that Cam Jordan's not going anywhere?
I mean, is there any Saints fan that you think isn't pumped? I'm trying to find a reason to not be excited. You know what I mean? Because the obvious answer is I'm excited. This is incredible news. He is essentially the middle linebacker of your defense without playing that position. You know what I mean? He
Correct.
Runs the huddle. He does everything like that. You know, he's that guy now. He's learned from Jonathan Vilma. He's learned from Curtis Lofton. He's learned from these other guys that are leaders that, you know, or were leaders on the teams. And so, I mean, he's absolutely ready to go. I'm excited. I think the more fun thing to do is try to find, or not try to find, but is there any way that this is bad? I mean, I don't think there's any way to flip this into even sort of negative.
The only sort of negative thing it is, and I think it's a home run. I think this is you had to do this. He's the heartbeat of your defense. Eventually, they're going to run out of money.
Okay.
And the only thing, remember, once it's smart of the Saints doing this now, because they also have to lock up Michael Thomas, Marshawn Lattimore, Alvin Kamara. Those are all the same draft class. And those are all three foundation pieces for what your team's going to be. The only possible thing that could derail those three guys being re-signed, Cody, is Drew Brees. Because they got all that dead money coming on that Drew Brees contract whenever he retires.
Right.
And that's going to eat up salary cap space. So, I am not a front office salary cap extraordinaire by any stretch of the imagination. But the other thing that I found interesting, and we'll get to it in the next segment, who's next for that big payday? And Sean Payton actually kind of indicated yesterday during minicamp who that would be. I have a funny feeling that the Saints front office, Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, that brain trust, they are trying to lock up everyone they can right now. They're trying to lock up their foundation young pieces right now. You think $42 million is a lot of guaranteed money for Cam Jordan? The $52 million contract, does it feel a little bit like... Does it feel a little bit like a hometown discount? A little bit? I feel like maybe Cam Jordan could have gotten more money if he hit the open market, especially the way that money's been flying recently in the NFL. Once again, the extension's worth $52.5 million. It does look like that Cam now will retire as a member of the Saints unless he decides to keep playing on in his later years. So the extension is reportedly worth $52.5 million with a maximum of $55.5 million. That includes $42 million guarantees. So first of all, big up to Cam. He's getting $42 million guaranteed. My man's set. He's already made a good amount of money. Now he's going to get $42 million guaranteed. So no matter what happens, Cam's getting his money. Cam turns 30 on July 10th. And go back to that 2011 draft. That draft class was stacked with defensive linemen and pass rushers. Von Miller was taken at number 2 overall. Alden Smith, number 7. J.J. Watt was number 11. Ryan Kerrigan, 16. Adrian Claiborne, 20. Then there's Jordan at 24. Muhammad Wilkerson at 30. And Cam Hayward at 31. That's a lot of great pass rushers and defensive linemen in one draft. That's why the Saints, if you remember, there were some people clamoring for them to try to trade up and try to trade way up in that draft, and they didn't. They sat pat, they got Cam Jordan at 24, and then they traded back up in the first round and took Mark Ingram. But they took both of those guys in the later part of the first round. And both are in the league, and both are playing at a high level. Smart front office moves there. His 12 sacks last season was the fourth time Jordan logged double-digit sack totals for the Saints. He currently ranks number 5 among edge defenders last season, according to Pro Football Focus. The only guys that Pro Football Focus have ranked ahead of him in edge defenders, Calais Campbell, Khalil Mack, J.J. Watt, and Von Miller. I'll say it again. The only edge defenders that Pro Football Focus says is better than the New Orleans Saints, Cam Jordan, is Calais Campbell, Khalil Mack, who's been a Defensive Player of the Year, J.J. Watt, who's been a 2-time Defensive Player of the Year, and Von Miller. That tells you the caliber of player that Cam Jordan is considered, not only by the Saints front office and the Saints organization, including his teammates, but across the league and people that follow the league. The Saints defense has also been a top 10 unit the last two seasons with Cam as the anchor. This is a tremendous, tremendous move. You don't see this a lot. The first day of mini camp, and the Saints are making sure that their guys are taken care of. Their leaders, their best players are taken care of. And I feel like they're not done with that as well. We'll talk more about that. Who's next in line to get a big payday? Sean Payton gave us a hint yesterday while he spoke to the media. We'll talk more about that right here at RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Give us a call, on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Reminder, coming up, second hour, we'll have our interview with the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, coming up at 7:32, dab middle of the second hour. He'll help us put a bow on the LSU baseball season. And then in the final hour, 8:32, we'll be talking to former New Iberia senior high star, McNeese State Hall of Famer, Kerry Joseph, currently on the staff of the Southeastern Lions. He's going to be receiving an honor from his former CFL team, the Rough Riders.
Rough ride or die.
We'll be talking with Kerry Joseph at 8:32 today. But right now I want to keep the New Orleans Saints discussion rolling right along. As we led off with, Cam Jordan received himself quite a large extension from the New Orleans Saints, a 3-year extension that's going to keep him locked up through the 2023 season. More than $40 million of that is guaranteed. And Cam Jordan's coming off a terrific 2018 season where he had 12 sacks, 49 total tackles, and one fumble recovery. He's a 4-time Pro Bowler, 2-time All-Pro, and he's the heart and soul of that defense. It makes great sense that the Saints lock him up. And he's one of the foundation pieces. And now you don't have to worry about him. Cam, your heart and soul, your defense is good to go. So who's next? Because this is the problem that the Saints have.
Who are you, Goldberg?
This is what the Saints have to do moving forward. We'll always focus in on the Drew Brees situation. Is he going to come back for another year? So forth and so forth. That's not their bigger concerns. For the Saints, they had one of the best draft classes in their history, if not all time. And all those foundation pieces, those guys are going to have to get paid. Marshawn Lattimore, first-round pick, your number one cornerback. Michael Thomas, second-round pick, your number one wide receiver, breaking franchise records left and right. And then your 2-time Pro Bowl, dynamic, all-purpose running back in Alvin Kamara, who was a 4th-round selection. All three of those guys are on their rookie deals. All three of those guys have outperformed their rookie contracts, specifically Kamara and Thomas. And all three of those guys are going to get paid. Saints head coach Sean Payton was unusually loose-lipped during his press conference following Tuesday's minicamp practice. Payton praised defensive end Cam Jordan and his much-deserved contract extension to keep him in New Orleans to 2023. But Payton took things a step further as he noted that wide receiver Michael Thomas, a first-team All-Pro in 2018, is the team's next priority to re-sign. And Payton didn't stop there. He suggested that general manager Mickey Loomis, sorcerer, and his staff have already begun preparing for negotiations with Thomas's representatives. Can they get him to re-sign before the end of the season? He's a top three wide receiver in the league, so you're going to have to pay Michael Thomas as if he is a top three wide receiver in the National Football League. Can't guard Mike is not going to be helping you out and giving you a discount. He's in the prime of his career. He's going to get paid. So I think they did this to help out things. Because remember, Jordan, they re-upped Jordan far more. He was far ahead of schedule. Jordan was still 2 years away before signing his extension, before his contract was up. Thomas is scheduled to be a free agent next year. So they go ahead and structure the deal with Cameron Jordan
get that taken care of, be able to figure out, yes, they're giving him an extension, but maybe that money is backloaded to free up money in the next couple of years to be able to re-sign Michael Thomas? Possibly. Mickey Loomis, once again, is a wizard.
Was he a sorcerer or a wizard? You know, that's a discussion for off air. I don't have to explain to you the difference. We don't have enough time.
Is there...
No, we're not going. See, I'm telling you, we're not going there.
So here's your refresher on free agents in the next 2 years. These are unrestricted free agents only. After next season in 2020, Drew Brees, Teddy Bridgewater, Michael Thomas, Eli Apple, Andres Pete, Von Bell, and David Onyemata are all unrestricted free agents. In 2021, you luck out here because you got Alvin Kamara because he was a fourth-round pick. You got that extra year on that deal. 2021, Alvin Kamara, Sheldon Rankins, Marcus Williams, Larry Wolford, and DeMario Davis. It's a lot of people to pay and only so much money to go around. So the fact that you know you're going to deal with the Drew Brees situation year in, year out, of those guys that are going to be coming free agents, unrestricted free agents in 2020, we know Brees, but take Brees off the table. You're going to have to make a decision about Teddy Bridgewater. Eli Apple, you'd like to be able to come back, but is he going to play his way into a better contract in the free agent market and you won't be able to afford him? Von Bell, Andres Pete, would you, if you lose those guys, are you going to be terribly upset? No. David Onyemata, maybe. But Michael Thomas. So I feel like they did the Cam Jordan deal to set things up to be able to give Michael Thomas that contract extension. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him give Michael Thomas that contract extension this summer. We're going to throw it up on the Twitter, 103.7 The Game Twitter poll question. We're going to have an answer a Twitter poll question. Who's next? Who's going to get paid next for the New Orleans Saints? Is it going to be Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, or Marshawn Lattimore? You can vote. We'll update you throughout the show. When we come back, we'll talk about the New Orleans Pelicans whining and dining Zion Williamson right here on 103.7 The Game.
Williamson, baseline, driving left side, pucks and fires it down with two hands. 73-66, Duke by seven, timeout, Virginia Tech.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, that's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Want to give us a call? Pick up the phone. Dial 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. That's the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We led off today's show talking about New Orleans Saints, wheels, and deals. That's right, Cameron Jordan, their four-time Pro Bowl defensive end, two-time All-Pro, heart and soul of the defense, received a contract extension with a guaranteed worth of more than $40 million. Lock him up through 2023. We also talked about who's next. Who's going to get that big payday next? Who's going to get that contract extension next? One of those foundation pieces. We gave you three options. It's on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. You can go vote now on our latest poll. Who's going to next to get that contract extension to get paid from the New Orleans Saints? Your options. Michael Thomas, All-Pro wide receiver, record-setting player for the New Orleans Saints. Alvin Kamara, running back extraordinaire, pass catcher as well. And Marshawn Lattimore, lockdown corner. So please, go vote on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. But the Saints aren't the only ones doing some wheeling and dealing or whining and dining. The New Orleans Pelicans have been making moves for their front office, to their training staff, under new leader David Griffin. But they also have the number one pick in this year's NBA draft. And even though everyone's expecting them to trade Anthony Davis and possibly get another pick in return, some assets, some current players, maybe an all-star. There's all types of scenarios coming out of New Orleans and a lot of speculation nationally on what's going to be done. The national media keeps force-feeding us the Lakers scenario. There's a bit of pushback out of New Orleans on that. That's not to say that David Griffin wouldn't make a deal and ship AD to the Lakers if it benefited him, if he was able to get multiple picks and multiple players. We'll see. But that's not the only thing that's been their priority. They are going to take Zion Williamson. That goes without saying. The former Duke star, you heard the clip. Tremendous talent. Some people say he's a generational talent. He's going to be coming, the big fella, your power forward. The New Orleans Pelicans will take. And there's been some talk about that he wasn't thrilled about having to come to New Orleans, whatnot and whatnot. I never believe all that. I mean, hell, after the Pelicans won the lottery, national media jumped all over it saying that he should go back to Duke and not go to the Pels. What kind of nonsense is that? But on the same day that Cam Jordan got his deal with his big contract extension, the Pels pulled out all the stops. Reports are they had Zion Williamson in town, part of a wining and dining with prospective picks in this summer's NBA draft. And there's so many great restaurants and great places to take someone in New Orleans. But they went big, okay? They didn't mess around. They went big, and they took Zion Williamson to Commander's Palace. Now, Cody, I don't know about you. I've never been able to go to Commander's Palace because I only got so much money.
You want to know how far out of my bracket that is? I'm not even sure I knew Commander's Palace was a thing. Like, you're kind of telling me now that Commander's Palace is one of these places I can't go to. So that's how far out of the loop I am. I don't even know what this place. I assume it's seafood.
It's a five-star restaurant, legendary restaurant in New Orleans. And it's a palace. It's called Commander's Palace for a reason.
It's not ironic, man.
No. This is not ironic. So they wined and dined the fella. And took him to the iconic place in New Orleans. Now, I've never been there. I hear it's amazing. It has a reputation of being a tremendous historic eatery there in New Orleans. I once told my wife, I'll put it to you this way. I once told my wife, I was like, hey, for our anniversary, what do you think about, you know, I try to get approval on these things. And she looked at me and she's like, we don't have that kind of money. Like, this was the husband coming up and going, I want to do something really nice for my boo bear. And I'm going to take her out and I'm going to spend some good money on her and take her to one of the nicest, fanciest places in New Orleans. And my wife straight up turns to me, Cody, and she's like, no.
It's practical.
She's like, no. No. You can take me out to eat. That's fine. But you can't take me there. Like, it's that kind of big deal. So, look, they're doing their part. This is what they're supposed to be doing. They're whining and dining. Zion's going to be coming. And, look, they didn't have – we can make a joke here. Didn't necessarily have to take him to Commander's Palace. You know, he's going to be the first overall pick, and that first overall pick money is first overall pick money.
Commander's Palace Restaurant of the Year in New Orleans 2018.
Yes, there you go. That's the type of place that you walk
by. Oh, I've been. Okay, I see the picture of this place now. It's one of those. It's as famous as it is, but it's very unassuming when you walk up on it.
When you walk up on it, but inside it's not.
Exactly, right. But the exterior of the building, it's across from a cemetery, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, I know exactly what we're talking about now. My brother, who lives in New Orleans, doesn't live far from there, and he lives in a very nice neighborhood in New Orleans.
Has your brother ever ate there?
Yes, but only, I think, don't they do like a buffet at lunch?
I'm not for sure.
They have something different. I don't know if he's ever been there for like the are they closed for dinner? There's something
about this restaurant. I walked by there one time, Cody, and I feel like someone came out towards the sidewalk and told me to walk on the other side of the street.
Yeah.
No.
There's a dress code. What happens when I click this dress code button? Oh, goodness. Business attire. Jackets are preferred for gentlemen. Collared shirts and closed-toed shoes are required for gentlemen. No shorts, flip-flops, T-shirts, sweatshirts, or sweatpants. Jeans are discouraged. Ripped jeans are not allowed.
Now, that takes you out of the running for sure.
No, I can't go at all. I don't own anything that, like... It says jackets are preferred for gentlemen. What I'm wearing right now, Raymond, does this count as a jacket?
That is not the kind of jacket they're talking about, my friend.
It is a jacket, though. I read the website. I would argue.
They're talking about a suit jacket is what they're... Sport
they
coat.
They didn't specify blazer, so I'm going to argue to the death that they have to let me in.
I feel like a road trip is in our future of us wearing the tuxedos from Dumb and Dumber.
Hey, that would work.
And walking in.
That would work.
In a creamsicle tuxedo and a light blue, pastel blue tuxedo with a top hat.
Yeah, it's one of those places that opens from 11:30 to 1:30 and then closes again and doesn't reopen until 6.
Ooh.
They do a lunch for a few hours from 11 to 1:30 and then they close up shop and they open for dinner at 6.
Do we want to take a guess on what the bill was?
I mean, as high as Zion wanted it to be. Oh, are you thinking 5-6 grand?
Oh, it all depends on how many people in his entourage came, how many family members came. I don't know how many people. I can't. The reports just have that's where they took him. It does not say how many people were part of this dinner party that occurred yesterday in New Orleans.
I mean, I'm going to pull up the menu here, but there are prices on the menu. Let's see. Oh, you can do an optional wine pairing per person for only $54. So there's that.
Okay, we can stop right now. We could stop right now.
What, $95 for blackberry galette? What? Why did you make me pull this up? Griddle seared gulf fish is $46. What? Molasses glazed Texas quail, $44. Stop. This isn't real.
It is real.
Oh, wait. Here we go. A selection of artisanal cheeses. You can get a selection of one for $10. So they gave you some cheese for $10. Stop complaining about Whataburger. That $1.10 for the cheese ain't so bad no more.
No, it is not.
Why am I... Well, the filet mignon is only $45. I feel like that's actually sort of reasonable. Of all the other things on the menu, that's the one thing that's actually not.
So what we're saying is, what we're trying to tell you is that the Pels, David Griffin, and the rest of the front office, they pulled out not the red carpet, because the Pels aren't, well, I guess the Pels do have red, right?
There's some red in there.
There's some red and some,
it's like red,
royal blue.
Red, blue,
gold,
and like white, I guess. I don't know. But then if you throw in the Mardi Gras jerseys, you got purple, you got yellow, you got green.
They just rolled out the carpet, and they took Zion, their number one overall pick, to Commander's Palace.
You can go to Commander's Palace and get Chef Troy's Playground Tasting Menu, where he makes you like a little bit of all these different things.
Okay, a little sample. Okay.
It's only $95.
Outstanding.
One of the things on that menu is called the Fuzzy Buffalo. This is stupid.
So, Pels, they're whining and dining Zion Williamson. I don't think they
I hope Zion
to.
Rolled up in ripped jeans, flip-flops, and a tank top. And was like, I'm ready to go, guys. What are we doing here? And they couldn't tell him anything. You just got to take him.
They're like, sir, here are some shoes.
Yeah, he walks in and
they had shoes on the ready.
He gets taken to the little closet at Commander's with all the sample jackets and shoes and things. And so we're going to need you to put this on. You think they have one to fit a dude who's like 6'6", 200 and some pounds? I don't know if they have a jacket for him.
And the guy could make a joke about the shoes because remember he blew out his shoe in that game?
These aren't Nike, right? I think the point we're trying to make is that
the Pels are not wasting any expense.
If first impressions are important, then they tried their best here.
They brought out the big guns.
Zion's like, and wait, I don't get in trouble for this. No one's gonna fuss at me, or you know, I don't have to keep this a secret. I can like talk about that. You took me to, yeah, Zion. This
the
ain't
buzz
college.
About him. I'm gonna say this right now. The buzz generating for Zion Williamson. 99.9% sure coming to the New Orleans Pelicans. If he is just good, my man won't have to worry about paying him for a meal in New Orleans the whole time he's here. I'm just, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Because he's going to want to be here. And if he's like, hey, I want to be here, and he embraces the culture and he embraces the city like the Saints players do, like Michael Thomas and all those younger guys, Marshawn Lattimore and all those guys embrace.
Alan Kamara rides his bike to practice.
All those guys embrace New Orleans and embrace the culture. If Zion Williamson does that, it's a wrap, man. Like, he will become beloved in no time, and he won't have to worry about paying any meal, whether that's at Commander's Palace or the chicken
Taco
strips
Bell.
Down at the bodega, okay, by the Superdome. It don't matter.
There's a lot of Brothers Chicken I noticed in like down by the Superdome area. Good chicken there.
Yes. Yes. So
I've been lost wandering New Orleans a time or two and been like, I need chicken.
I one time somehow found my way crossing Canal Street for no good reason.
I got go to break.
It's time. Producer says time to go to break. We'll wrap up hour number
Forgot
one.
We were on the air for a second. It was a problem.
We're wrapping up hour number one here of RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also check us on the Simulcast KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. Also, LUS Fiber has this 133 and 1133 in high definition. Start off the hour talking New Orleans Saints. Cam Jordan gets the contract extension through 2023. They lock him up, the four-time Pro Bowler, two-time All-Pro defensive end, edge rusher. We also talked about who we believe will be next in line. Sean Payton indicated it's going to be Michael Thomas that's going to be next in line getting paid. The Saints all-pro wide receiver, second-round draft pick from a few years ago. Then we also talked about the New Orleans Pelicans pulling out all the stops and the whining and dining of projected number one overall pick Zion Williamson, taking him to Commander's Palace in New Orleans. We're going to wrap up the first hour, though, here with a little more professional football talk. It was announced yesterday. Hard Knocks has selected its team for this summer. And sure enough, it's just win, baby. It is the Raiders.
Oh, thank God.
That makes me happy. Raiders.
I have one thing to say about this, and this is the only thing I have to say about it, because I've actually, admittedly, I've only ever watched clips and bits and pieces of Hard Knocks since its conception way back when or whatever. So I'm not the biggest Hard Knocks guy. So my take on this whole situation is, thank God, I'm so, so pleased that it's the Raiders, because that means that it's not the Saints.
The Saints would never go down for that, though.
No, because there's ways to get out of it. If you go play a London game, that takes you. I remember we talked about this last year. There are certain things you can do if you play in London. You can get out of it if you play.
Some teams can just you have to opt in.
Well, but it's not that you have to opt in, it's that you have to do other things for the NFL. See if I can find out how you can get out of those.
Well, the HBO cameras will get a peek at 2-a-days at joint practices with NFC champion Los Angeles Rams and Napa, and the Raiders and Rams will scrimmage in August. The new season of Hard Knocks will premiere August 6th, but here's what you're going to get. You get John Gruden. And you're going to have John Gruden at the helm, Al Davis's son with the bowl cut, Antonio Brown, Mr. Big Chest himself, Vontaze Perfect, Mr. I Get Suspended for Illegal Hits, and Richie Incognito.
Bully. I found what I was looking for as well.
It's going to be entertaining. Oh, man, that's going to be entertaining. I think they also got a guy that was already a star, an undrafted rookie defensive tackle, Ronald Ollie, who was on Netflix's Last Chance U. He's going to be in the mix as well. You have so many personalities. Oh, wow. This is going to be appointment television, and I can't wait for the Raiders to win six games.
There were only five teams that were actually eligible because of the way the NFL does. Because I told you that. I'll tell you in a second. There are ways you can get out of doing Hard Knocks if you accomplish other things in the season.
Like win games?
Exactly. One of them is win games, yes.
Be a playoff team means you don't have to be.
Exactly. The five teams that could have appeared on Hard Knocks were the Lions, boring. The Giants, even more boring. The 49ers, maybe. Jimmy G's kind of fun, maybe. And your Redskins. And then the Raiders. So I think out of the teams that were eligible, they went with, in my opinion, the best team. The things you can do to get out of it. A team cannot be selected if it was in the playoffs either of the last two seasons or if it has a first-year head coach. Can't have be on the show either. Or if your team has been on the program at any point in the last decade.
Oh, wow.
So there are three things you can do
so
to get out of it.
So that reduces the pool.
There were only five teams that HBO could even pick from going into this season.
But honestly, Hard Knocks.
Oh, they got the best one.
Hard Knocks was made for this for these Raiders.
Just
for John
win,
Gruden.
Just win, baby.
Oh.
ZY Spider X Banana.
It's going to be an absolute train wreck. Over and under, how many times Derek Carr is caught crying on camera?
Too many.
That's going to do it for the first hour. Coming up next, some LSU baseball talk right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
I think I'm putting my head down for this, taking the opportunity with both hands. So I can't really afford to live in two worlds right now. I'm going to try to focus on this, see where it goes, and we'll go from there.
Did you ever have this many people in your room?
Definitely not. That was definitely the first.
What's that like for you? The attention is coming with all this.
I think I took it, like yesterday, it was a bit overwhelming. But I think I'll be okay with it. I've had a few cameras before, so nothing like this, but I mean, I'm keeping my nerve so far.
Have you talked to your family about what you're doing?
I don't think they really understand, so I told my mom about a day or two ago, but I think no one back home really knows much of football, neither do I. So I think as I learn, I'll sort of explain it to them, and yeah.
We'll send them a pic.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition.
Pop quiz, Raymond. Pop quiz.
Pop quiz, yes.
Pop quiz.
Give it to me.
Was that clip we just heard, was that clip about golf or the World Cup?
It was.
I'll give you another. Wait.
Picture of all of us around.
Listen to his voice.
then they'll kind of get out of here how big it is.
Yeah.
Who's kind of taking you under your wings?
The answer's going to give it away.
Showing you the ropes.
There's been a lot of guys. All the guys sort of chip in here and there. I think mostly the vets and that. But no one really per se. Like,
he doesn't know anyone's name yet.
There's a lot of new faces to them probably. So I think it'll just come with time.
Okay, so now you've heard the voice. You didn't give it away. What sport are we playing right there? What are we talking?
Well, he's a rugby player.
I know you know the way to ruin the bit, Raymond.
Rugby has a World Cup, right?
There is a Rugby World Cup. You're actually right.
They
about
made
that.
A movie about it. Invictus.
Oh yeah. I just think it's funny that I'm listening to this guy talk, and it does not sound like we're about to talk American football.
No,
it sounds like we're talking like soccer, or
yeah.
Golf, or something along those lines. And then they ask him, "Who's taking you under your wing?" The vets. And he hasn't learned anyone's name yet. He has no. So what does your family think of this? They don't understand. They have no idea what I'm doing. Oh, this is great. This is great.
They have no idea. They're confused by it all.
Well, now that you passed the pop quiz, let everyone else know the information that you know.
So the young man who's speaking there is Tristan Blewett. He is a member of the NOLA Gold rugby team. Okay. And the Saints are giving him a tryout this week during minicamp. And Blewett would be the first rugby-playing Saint in team history. He wouldn't be the league's first, though. Okay? Patriot Nate Ebner and Houston Texans Johnson Bemoso have U.S. national team experience, while Eagles reserve tackle Jordan Malata was a force for the South Sydney team up until 2017. And not to forget that former Ravens Pro Bowler defensive tackle Hully Nada dominated the sport once upon a time as well in his youth. So it's not completely crazy that a rugby player is getting a tryout with the Saints.
He's only 22 years old.
And he's 5'10", 191 pounds, and he's fast and strong.
That's the thing. When I see 22 years old, that tells me that is plenty of time to mold this guy. When I say plenty of time, I mean two or three seasons to mold this guy into something. Do we have any word on what position they're looking at him at yet?
They have no idea. Could be running back, could be slot wide receiver, could be a gunner on special teams.
So something offensive, though, it's looking that
way?
He's
such a raw talent that you would just have him on the roster somewhere.
Right.
Like a Taysom Hill?
That's a very good analogy. Okay. Maybe you're not as comfortable with Blewett as you are with Hill, obviously, because he doesn't play the sport, but that's a good analogy, I think. You want to take a shot at the dart where he's from? I didn't know. I just looked it up. I'm not trying to act smart. I just don't know.
New Zealand?
No, he's from Johannesburg, South Africa.
He's a South African.
Yeah, so there you go.
There we go.
And only 22 years. That to me is the most intriguing part, that he's getting into this very, very early in his rugby career, I would imagine.
You know, Peyton does already, you know, has a quarterback who plays gunner on special teams, so it wouldn't be that much of a stretch. The connection here between the football and the rugby is because NOLA Gold's GM Ryan Fitzgerald is a former scout for the Senior Bowl in Mobile, the biggest college all-star game in the country, and he also worked for a few NFL teams in his career before taking over as NOLA Gold GM. And a lot of people believe that Tristan Blewett brings athletic open field speed. He also has nice hands. So, look, I think this is a great mini camp story. The likelihood of him being so raw, unless he blows the doors off of guys, this is just a tryout. He's not even signed. So it's a good little media story. Maybe he gets invited to training camp. Maybe he becomes a little bit of a story in training camp like Taysom Hill was a couple years ago. There's always those training camp stories, right? That kind of like, hey, this is something more than just, you know, going through drills. This guy's trying to make the roster. Could he be a scout team guy? Absolutely. He's already in the city because he already has his other job for the rugby team out of New Orleans. So the likelihood of him making the roster is very low, in my opinion, but it's a good story for a guy who is from South Africa, is not that all familiar with American football, but is a natural, young, dynamic athlete.
Yesterday, posted on the Advocate website at 7 p.m., it has here that Blewett lined up yesterday for his first practice. He had never worn a football helmet before in his life. He doesn't know the terminology. So, like, you saying that he doesn't know much about football is almost an understatement. Sounds like he doesn't know anything about American football.
It was the first day I walked in here and guest hosted a show.
There you go.
I had no idea what I was doing.
He lined up for his first, go around. He was actually playing safety yesterday at practice. He played safety for his first spot. Then they moved him over to special teams, and he did a lot on special teams. And then he even actually fielded some punts. They said he bobbled one punt, but they said that comes with the transition. In rugby, you're supposed to track the ball, and you want to catch it on the run.
Catch it on the run.
And he said here it's a little more difficult because you got to track it, get to the spot, and then wait. And he said, so that's just different for his body. Sean Payton has a cool quote here. He says, for him, to his credit, he's starting from square one. The first time we went out today and stretched, it was the first time he stretched relative to this sport. But he seemed pretty bright Monday, just picking up on the drills we were asking him to do.
So even the stretching exercises are completely different. It's completely foreign.
He has no clue. Let's see. Here we go. The writer for this, let me give him credit, Rod Walker for The Advocate. He writes that it was his first football experience, talking about Blewett. He's been on this professional rugby team. He came from South Africa just 7 months ago. So he's been in the U.S. less than a year, and he's trying this.
So his first experience of even watching probably the NFL was hanging out with teammates and people in New Orleans watching the Saints during their playoff run.
Well, that's what he says. And here's a quote from Blewett. Since I came here, I guess New Orleans, the big hype was trying to get to the Super Bowl last year. So, like, he came in when there was all this hype, like the Saints are going to make the run to the Super Bowl. They're going to do all this. He said, obviously, the city is behind it. Everything is Saints in New Orleans. So as soon as I got here, I sort of learned about it quickly.
So this cat started from scratch, but he's an at. So the best case scenario for him is going to be making the scout team. I'm just going to say that's the best case scenario. Now, the Saints are notorious for taking flyers on guys. Beer man comes to mind, right? Guy delivering beer all of a sudden becomes a star return specialist. So it's good to have those kind of invincible stories. This is terrific. But he has his career, and that's rugby, and that's what he's here in New Orleans for. So I'd expect him to Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis are not, they don't shy away from making difficult decisions. Like I said, this guy's not even signed. He just came out and was part of a tryout.
And actually, he doesn't have his other job right now. The rugby season just ended. The article here claims that if it was not for this opportunity, he would have traveled back to South Africa and be with his family right now, hanging out, I guess, waiting for next season.
Interesting.
So, I mean, he is going all in right here. And this is the quote that he said during the clip we played when asked about his family. They asked him, what does your family think about you trying to play for the Saints? Blewett said, I don't think they really understand. I told my mom a day or two ago, but nobody back home knows much about football. Neither do I. But as I learn, I'll explain it to him. So they have no clue what he's... Mom, I'm going to be over here to play football. What does that mean, son? Don't worry about it. No, not worth explaining.
I'll send you a YouTube clip.
If I make the team, we'll talk about it.
You know what?
This is fun.
We're going to make this another Twitter poll question. So go to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Should the New Orleans Saints sign South African rugby player Tristan Blewett to a contract? It's very simple, because right now he's only on a tryout. Do you think, even though as raw as he is, do you think the Saints should sign him to a contract and just have him on as a practice squad player? Doesn't have to be on the main roster. He just can be a practice squad player to develop. Should the Saints sign rugby player Tristan Blewett to a contract? You can go vote on that right now. Now some of you are going to say no, because you're going to say, you know what? My potential was never fully realized.
Oh, God, no. Don't be salty like that. Stop. I hope that's not true. I really hope that's not. Screw this guy. I played Ultimate Frisbee, and they never gave me a chance to be a quarterback. Like, screw that. No.
I was part of the third-team defense in the Division III program. I'm better than that.
It's like Uncle Rico. Hey, boy, you want to see me throw this football over the mountains? Like, come on now. Come on.
So we got We have two Saints. Poll questions up for you to vote on.
One last funny tidbit about Mr. Blewett here, because this article here is gold. You got to go find it. It's hilarious. Full of just great quotes. They asked him about pads and, like, hey, you don't wear pads in rugby, so what's, you know, you're on the football field and this and that. His quote was, I want to make sure I get it right. His quote said, but I guess if everyone has pads coming at me, I probably should wear them. So he goes out and he's like, you know what?
It's a very basic way of looking at it.
Like, everyone else has got them on. I guess I'll wear them too. Like, that's how little he know. Like, he got showed up to get dressed and, oh, okay. Coach, I don't have one of these plastic shoulder things, Coach. Where do I get that from? It's the best.
It's pretty good. So make sure to go to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account and vote on our two poll questions. So we'll see. We'll see if the South African rugby player lasts with the New Orleans Saints, or if it's just a good trainee, a good mini camp story, or even a training camp story. But I mean, you probably wouldn't have to give him that much of a contract.
No, and Lee, this is a league minimum deal.
Give him a
here
league minimum,
sure.
Let him be run the scout team, and when the season's over, he can go right into rugby.
He looks the part too. He looks like kind of looks like Owen Wilson. Owen Wilson mashed together with the guy that played Sunshine in Remember the Titans.
Nice.
Is that Ryan Gosling? I think it's Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, so he's like a mashup of Owen Wilson and Ryan Gosling.
When we come back here on
nothing. I got nothing. He stonewalled me. Dang it.
Here on RP3 Company, when we come back, we'll talk about LSU baseball. Not one, but two guys. Reports are coming out. They have tended to transfer out of the baseball program. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. LSU baseball. Their season came to an end, as we know, in the Super Regional there in Baton Rouge at Alex Box Stadium versus the Florida State Seminoles. We know this team is going to look an immensely different next season. Antoine Duplantis, the former Lafayette High star, is graduating. He's gone. Zach Watson, first pick in the third round, he's likely gone. Josh Smith, second round pick with the Yankees, he's likely gone. Zach Hess, Todd Peterson, they're in the bullpen, they'll be gone. You lose some other seniors. This will be a new-look team, definitely, for sure, next season. Some of the guys that have been carrying this team for the past few years since that College World Series run in 2017 are no longer going to be part of this team. But we also found out last night that two other players that are not graduating, that were not drafted, have decided to leave the program. Catcher Brock Mathis and pitcher Will Ripple attend to transfer from LSU. The Times-Picayune is reporting that both players entered their names into the NCAA transfer portal. Ripple's actually a member of the Acadiana Cane Cutters right here in our backyard. He's playing summer ball with them. I want to say Brock Mathis is playing for the Baton Rouge team in the league as well.
Well, guess who goes head-to-head tonight? The Cane Cutters and the Rougarou.
The Rougarou. Maneri confirmed that both are transferring out. He said, quote, they are both outstanding young men, and I wish them nothing but the best. So this happens every year at multiple programs. You know, Mathis is a sophomore who transferred in from Northwest Florida State. He did start 40 games at catcher for the Tigers this year. He helped give LSU a backup presence behind the plate, as Sol Garza had to recover from his torn MCL. But then towards the end of the season, you know that was Garza's job moving forward, not to mention that LSU has not one, not two, but three signees in the upcoming recruiting class that are played catcher in high school. The other big factor in this is that Mathis batted, wait for it, 164 with three home runs and 12 RBIs. 164. He saw the writing on the wall. Yes, he gave them. He was reliable behind the plate. He's a good catcher defensively. But Garza's the guy. Garza's the better player. And then they got more than likely better players coming in part of that new recruiting class. So Mathis saw the writing on the wall. So he's going to be looking for a new home. He's in the transfer portal. LSU did like Mathis's presence in the locker room and the leadership, but he obviously was going to be the odd man out.
And that's something I did notice at the Super Regional when he would come out to catch the pitcher for warm-up pitches while Saul was getting ready. I mean, he was excited. I would watch him catch the warm-up pitches, and he would be trying to get his pitcher focused. And then when Saul would come to take his spot, he would, you know, fist bumps and chest bumps. And I mean, you couldn't tell, at least from my perspective, during the final games that he was checked out already. To me, he was still locked in those final games, for what it's worth.
Rapol, a freshman from John Curtis there in the greater New Orleans area, he spent a year at the bottom of LSU's bullpen. He pitched only 16 and two-thirds innings. The highlight of his season came in actually the SEC tournament there in Hoover, where he struck out four Vanderbilt hitters in one inning, including J.J. Blede, the number four overall pick in the Major League Baseball amateur draft. But just like Mathis, his stats are not great for his season wearing the purple and gold. He had an ERA of 6.48. He only pitched 16 innings. His ERA was 6.5. So it's two more Tigers that won't be part of the mix next season. And when you think about it, Cody, this team is going to look wildly different, is it not? I mean, when you think about it, Watson and Duplantis are not, or you're going to miss those two guys out of the outfield. Cabrera is going to come back.
I mean, Watson, Duplantis, and Smith. That's who, and I mean, Brant Broussard is going to, and then is how he was going to be still in the lineup. You don't know. But the difference is, I think it's going to look different, but I think because I'm expecting Bianco to fill one of those slots in the infield, preferably second base, probably.
I can see that.
And we see Bianco, he's been in the lineup, so it's not going to be like a completely new face. Who's going to take the shortstop position? That's, you know, who knows.
You're going to be missing Chris Reed. Isn't he graduating?
Yeah, he's gone too, and he played first or third. But Beloso is going to play first base.
I'm just looking at the lineup. Duplantis, Watson going out of the outfield, two starters there. Yeah. You're going to be missing your first baseman, right?
Well, Beloso, I mean, it's Chris Reed played so many positions. He DH'd, he played third, and he played first. So you're not missing your
first. So a utility
first
player, I guess.
Yeah.
So you're going to be, because you'll have Beloso. He was a freshman this year, guy out of John
and
Curtis.
And C.J. Willis could show up. I mean,
he's going to have to.
Didn't have a great season, but.
He's going to have to. Broussard's graduating, right?
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah, he was a senior, I believe.
So utility player, two outfielders. Utility player, one of your middle infielders, gone. Your starting catcher for the majority of the year, gone.
No, but that doesn't hurt anything.
It makes
things sound worse than what they really are when you say it that way. Because it's true what you
Garza
said.
Garza couldn't catch the entire year because of back issues.
Right. Now, it's true what you said. It's just missing Brock Mathis isn't. I don't care. I'll take a freshman out of high school. That doesn't really bother me. I'm not trying to be a you-know-what, but if Brock Mathis if Brock Mathis started every single game for LSU this season and finished like his season was going, I would welcome a freshman or a JUCO transfer or someone. You know what I mean? So that one doesn't bother me.
But it still means another starter's gone from the team, though. That's what I'm saying.
Sort of. I just don't consider Brock Mathis a starter anymore. But he did start a lot of games, so you're not wrong. It's just I don't think he's a starter.
I love that you're a half glass full. I'm just saying it's going to be.
It's not going to be like
out
this
of those
year.
Guys left. My bigger point is this: you lose a lot of veteran leadership off this team. So, as a diehard LSU fan, who are you looking to step up and become those leaders? Because you don't have Watson there, you don't have Duplantis there, you don't have Hess. We can bash Hess all we want, but he provided leadership for that team. He's not there. Todd Peterson's not on that team. So. Is it Cabrera? Is he going to grow into that role, maybe? Is it Beloso, even though can you be a sophomore at LSU and be a leader of the team, Cody? Is that possible?
I mean, if you hit double-digit home runs, you keep hitting home runs, maybe.
I do like how he swings the bat.
The starting pitching, if everyone gets healthy, the starting pitching will look all right. But then
Well, you would think that Henry and Marceau would take the next step next year, right? With being starters as freshmen, that experience is going to prove to be extremely valuable.
But then there's
also
guys like A.J. Labus and Nick Storrs who we've like never seen pitch. So
that's a good point. That's a good point. So we'll see. We'll talk more about this after the break. LSU Baseball Talk right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We talked in the last segment about LSU baseball, two guys transferring out. Brock Mathis, a dependable defensive catcher who struggled at the plate. And that's the nice way of saying that. The way Cody said it off the air was just filled with profanity. It was so harsh. Very angry. It's very angry. No, I'm just joking.
I didn't curse. Look, he's better than me. You're not going to catch me like...
I beg to differ.
Yeah, you're right.
No one's better than you.
You know, but
I'd like to see him come in here, put on the headset, and produce this show.
Okay, fair enough. I challenge you, Brock Mathis.
But we had two guys enter the transfer portal. We know a lot of guys have gotten drafted. We know some guys have graduated. And we know some other of the prospects coming in have also been drafted and won't be coming to LSU. So let's just take a moment here to kind of look ahead at next season. Look, Paul Menary, his staff, what do, Cody? They always reload. They find a way to replace guys. And a lot of these guys step up that maybe you weren't even paying attention to this year, right? So let's look at what they're losing here. Let's go through here. So they lose their top three hitters. Josh Smith, he's gone. He's a second-round draft pick, so count him off the board. He's going to be gone. Antoine Duplantis, the program's all-time hit leader, he's gone. He got drafted as well, plus he graduates. He's your second leading hitter. Your third leading hitter, Zach Watson, he's gone as well, third-round draft pick, so he's gone. So you lose two of your starting three outfielders. Was Josh Smith your best middle infielder?
I mean, he was the best shortstop or best second baseman playing shortstop for LSU, yeah. He's not going to play shortstop.
No, he's going to play second base at the next level.
Yeah.
Right.
But yes, who was your second? You can answer your own question. Who played second base for LSU? Exactly. Brant Broussard, Hal Hughes.
It was a rotational.
Who was in there during the season? Gavin Dugas, whatever. So, yes, I think that answers that. Josh Smith, probably when you look at the season as a whole, this one particular season, the best player on the team.
Oh, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
As much as
I don't think that's not a hot take, I don't think.
No, and Smith was terrific. So, but you do have Garza coming back. He came on strong with the bat. He's healthy. He can be your everyday catcher,
just
I do believe.
Stay healthy.
Now, here's the other thing. He doesn't have to be your everyday catcher.
If you find someone else, he can DH.
Right.
Yes.
One of those freshman guys like you pointed out could be just a defensive guy and he could be your DH and you could have Beloso be your first baseman.
The only other catchers on the roster right now are Braden Doty, a sophomore, and C.J. Willis. As of right now. Now, that's, not with anybody new that they're going to bring in. I don't know if they're bringing a catcher in or not, but that's the current situation at that position.
I'm trying to look here who else that you lose.
Oh, well, you lose Clay Moffitt.
I'm looking at hitters right now.
Beloso
does come back. We've lined him up. He's going to be your everyday first baseman. I think next
as far
year.
As hitters go, you only lose the exact guys that you named already. Josh Smith, Antoine Duplantis, Zach Watson, and then you also lose Brant Broussard and Chris Reed.
Correct. So Reed's gone as well.
If you look at the starting lineup for the Super Regional, you're losing you're losing five guys out of the starting lineup against Florida State. If that's how we want to look at it. Because Brant and Chris Reed both got starts in those games.
So you're losing essentially five position player starters?
Yep.
Because Garza already had taken over catching responsibility.
Right. If you want to throw Mathis in there, you say five and a half or six. If you really want to do that, you could say.
So just your everyday players. Let's just focus in on that. Here are the guys that you're going to have step up next year, right?
Yeah, your mic went out. You're going to have to grab that other mic. We're having issues with mic number two. Now you're going to have to just grab mic three. We are struggling with microphone number two here at 103.7 The Game, but that's all right. That's okay.
How am I now?
Fine. You sound great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I have to just readjust everything over here, but that's fine. It's fun. It's fine.
I feel great. So here are the guys that you have to have step up.
Now you look weird because there are two microphones pointing at you. And I know you. Oh, there you go. Good way to solve that problem.
Thank you. So Cabrera had a bit of a down year this year, right? He had a slump for whatever reason. That could have been just sophomore.
And you know what hurts worse than that is that he ended the year on a slump. And that makes it, that to me, that makes, that amplifies everything. If you hit a slump in the year and then you, but you finish the season sort of strong, like Saúl Garza. Look at that, the perfect example. Everybody right now is so high on Saúl. Oh, can't wait for next year. Hopefully he comes in and he hits the ball. But if you know, look at his season as a whole, it was not that great at the plate.
But here's the thing. You have your two best power hitters coming back because Cabrera was tied for the lead for home runs with 12.
If you want to, you probably...
And Beloso was second by himself, right, with 10.
In theory, your three best power hitters are coming back because I know Garza didn't have the numbers to claim to be one of the best power hitters, but, I mean, he is a power hitter.
Yeah, because you can take out Duplantis because that was weird that he hit
12
home runs
this year. Exactly. Yeah, you're picking up what I'm putting down.
Yeah. So, okay, so you'll have Cabrera, Beloso, and Garza. So those are probably going to be your 3, 4, 5 guys.
I'll buy that in some order. In some order.
Because they're also big fellas. Okay, they're not.
Yeah, because DiGiacomo.
They're not speedy guys by any stretch.
DiGiacomo is screaming, bat me first.
Yes.
Maybe so, second, depends on how he
So works. If you have your 3, 4, 5 guys lined up there, easy. DiGiacomo, 275, not a bad first year, 275.
Do you have his on-base percentage in front of you? Do they have that?
Yes. Hold on. 376.
For a leadoff guy, that's a little low. And it's respectable, but for a leadoff guy, that's a little low. But again, he was a freshman.
They only had one guy with on-base percentage over 4.
Well, there you go.
Never mind. And that was Josh Smith.
There you go. That'll tell you that.
So you got your power. You got your power guys, right? You got, you're going to have Cabrera, Beloso, Garza, probably Garza 3, however you want to play.
Like you said, 3, 4, 5. I agree.
You got your 3, 4, 5 guys. They're everyday position players. One will be a DH. The other two will be the first baseman and your catcher.
Yeah.
You're set there. So you're going to have DiGiacomo, who batted 275. He could be your leadoff guy or your number two hitter, right? But then after that is where the question marks are going to come into place.
Well, that kid that's going to play both, Maurice Hampton, right? He's taking over center field.
He's a stud.
That you can pencil that in there. He can bat first or second probably and play center field.
So you're going to have that, but then you're going to have guys really step up. Drew Bianco.
Going to need it.
He's going to have to take the next step because they're going to need him. And that's the thing. LSU's going to need these cats to step up. C.J. Willis.
Going to need
good it. Good young man. C.J. batted 212 this year. Appeared in 24 games. 212. Gavin Dugas. He had some moments. Mm-hmm. He only batted 186. Appeared in 19 games. Drew Bianco appeared in 39 games. Only batted 176. Mathis, we already talked about. He's transferring out. He appeared in 48 games and batted 164. Ooh.
What are the odds of Hal Hughes learning to hit a baseball? Because, I mean, he's a great guy to have in the lineup, but he can't hit at all.
You're going to keep him at the bottom of the lineup, and he's going to be a defensive guy, right? Which is okay?
It sucks giving up an out in college baseball where they allow you to DH, and it doesn't penalize your team whatsoever, and you're just giving up an out almost, it feels like. I mean, he gets on base 1.5 times every 10 times he goes to the plate.
I would agree with that.
I feel so, like I'm not even trying to be like.
Can you have Dugas at second base?
You can. I think you can, but he's. Yes. Yes is my answer to that question.
So who's going to be short? Who's going to play shortstop?
I guess. Is there a freshman coming in? That's a great question. I mean, Hal Hughes is maybe your first day starter just because he's, you know, the vet, so to speak.
And it's going to be Dugas or Bianco probably at short. Right?
I mean, Bianco looks like a second baseman, but maybe
Bianco
he can
looks
short.
Like a second baseman.
Maybe he can.
So you're going to have one of those two guys that are going to have to get better at the plate. They're going to have to step up. play second or short for this team. And we're not even got to the pitching yet, which does return Cole Henry and Landon Marceau, which is great because they got all the experiences as freshmen. But they lose all the back-end stuff as well. The rotation, the pitching staff will have guys coming back. Matthew Beck will be a senior. Devin Fontenot will be a junior. You got guys like Chase Costello, Vit Meyer. All those guys come back. You do lose Clay Moffitt. He graduates. Caleb Gilbert graduated. You lose Zach Hess. He's gone. You lose Todd Peterson. He's gone. So maybe the back end of the rotation, maybe that won't be as bad. You'd like to see him get a left-handed pitcher, though.
Just one.
Now, to be fair, they had Easton McMurray, but he got injured and never played this year. Right. The kid out of Bakersfield, California.
Chad hit us up on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, just reiterating what I was saying about Hal Hughes. Chad says he doesn't believe Hal Hughes has gotten a hit since late February, and he's probably not far off. Hal Hughes just I don't understand. Like,
174, dude.
He goes, and it seems like he goes up there with no confidence. That's what bothered me. It seems like he goes up there and basically say, yeah, okay, Chad said the same thing. It's just giving up and out. When you only have 9 guys in your lineup, 27 outs total to deal with in a game, and that guy has to bat at least 3 times, just the way the rules of the game are, I don't like just giving up basically 3 of your 27 outs because a guy can play in the
maybe
field.
Maybe one of those other guys pushes him.
That's what I'm hoping.
Okay, so you're going to have Dugas and you're going to have
Bianco,
they're going to be probably your second and shortstop. They're going to be fighting at those positions. Maybe one of them also battles because Maneri does like having the battle at third base.
And, he hasn't been able to figure out third base does, in a long does, time.
Yeah, and he likes having that, though, right? He likes having those battles going on, guys pitching. So Dugas and Bianco, they're going to be in the infield somewhere, either as the backup or they're going to be the starters there. But they're going to have to step up at the plate. A guy that – where are they going to put him? Because you're right. The kid out of Memphis is going to be an instant plug-and-play starter in the outfield. So you're going to have Cabrera, him, and obviously
DiGiacomo.
You're going to have DiGiacomo. So that's going to be your starting outfield.
And I'm happy with that.
I'm happy with that, too. C.J. Willis is going to have to fight and scrap a way to find a place on this team.
Well, if he could find a way to either catch or play first base.
He can do both.
That's what I'm saying. If he can find a way to get a starting spot at either behind the plate or at first base, then you can turn and take Kay Beloso or Saul Garza and put them at DH.
Yeah, you're right. That's probably what they're going to do. That's smart thinking. And then you could also just have Willis could be your utility guy backing up everyone
right.
else. You
kind
could
of take that Chris Reed role.
There you go.
A little bit. I mean, and we saw flashes of it from C.J. Willis this season. He was a bit of a little spark plug when LSU was lulling and down in the middle of the year.
The young man from Ruston.
Yeah, so I mean, he did. Yeah, he's got a little something there. There's something behind him that at least, you know, I'm excited to see. Hopefully he can improve and get better. And it's going
to
be fun.
But of the guys I talked to you about, and I'm not talking about pitchers, but the guys we talked about, who in your mind, if you had to put money on right now, who's going to be your leader in the clubhouse?
Oh, Daniel Cabrera. If I had to put money on it, Daniel Cabrera.
You think it's going to be Cabrera?
Yeah.
Just from osmosis from being with Watson and Duplantis for 2 years?
Well, he's also...
he'll be a junior.
I would want to say Maurice Hampton, but he's a freshman, so you can't go with that coming in. I'm going to say Daniel Cabrera because I think everyone else, whether this is true or not, I think a lot of people, and probably Paul Maneri included, look at Daniel Cabrera now as the best player on the team.
I think you make that argument, right?
You know what I'm saying? Whether that's true or not with guys coming in or improvement, what have you, I don't know. But I think right now the facade and the feel and look of LSU baseball is that Daniel Cabrera is now the guy.
I agree with that. And I think they're better at pitching. I don't think, you know, because, yeah, you lose Hess. I guess Eric Walker's going to be coming back, too.
I mean, I would imagine. He's a sophomore. He's got to come back. There you go.
You got Matthew Beck coming back. Fondo's coming back. Marceau, Vit Meyer, Hilliard.
The fielding is what looks
a
lot different. Yeah.
You have depth at pitching for the first time in a while, and you're going to have some studs coming in, too. So that's good. And these guys are now going to be veteran players next year. So I think you're going to be set, even with losing Zach Hess and Todd Peterson on the back end. But it's the everyday starters. You lose 5 of those guys, really, essentially 5. So you're going to have some of these younger guys step up for the LSU baseball team. So We'll see. It'll be an interesting summer for sure for LSU baseball heading into fall camp. We're going to come back here after this break, wrap up the second hour. UL softball talk. The season may be over, but the accolades are still coming their way. We'll talk about that right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber at 133 and 1133 in HD. Spent the better part of this hour talking LSU baseball, a couple players transferring out, and then me and Cody broke down where they're going to be going from here, who's going to have to step up next season for the Tigers if they want to get back to Omaha for the first time since 2017. We also touched on New Orleans Saints. They got themselves a rugby player. He's trying out.
Got a great accent.
Got a great accent. He plays for the NOLA Gold rugby team.
Speaking of,
he's Cody's new favorite player.
He is. Taysom Hill, move over. I have a new favorite player in the NFL now. We were letting know. We made a boo-boo. I have to give proper credit here. Brad Newell at LSU Tiger Backer. He responded to our poll question about should the Saints sign Tristan Blewett, the South African rugby player. And he let us know that Ryan Gosling was in Remember the Titans, but he played a different character. It's Kip Pardue is the name of the actor.
The great Kip Pardue.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling, that's right. Kip Pardue played Sunshine, the quarterback. Ryan Gosling played the guy who gave up. He was the bad defensive back.
I can't keep up with him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Coach, I don't play defense. I don't want you to play defense. I just want you to follow him around.
That's a good line. That's a good line.
Kelly Broussard on Twitter as well, saying his name is Blewett. What could go wrong?
Low-hanging
fruit, but funny nonetheless, Kelly. Funny nonetheless. And then we've got one more response here, actually, on the poll question. At Cajun Saint 88, saying that it's not a simple yes or no. A third option as a maybe. He likes giving them a tryout. If they like what they see, then yes. If not, then no. That's what training camp is. So
I'd love to see him on the scout team. Why? Because you don't have to pay him all that much, right? You can sign him to be on the scout team. He can actually spend a year learning professional football, taking the time to learn the playbook, practicing day in and day out. Because here's the thing. If you try him out and you like what you maybe see, and then you just cut him, well, he's not going to retain that professional football knowledge. He's going to go back to rugby and focus in on that. So if you actually like what you see out of this guy, why not sign him to the chief? You don't have to pay him anything, and you can just develop him on your scout team.
A lot of interaction on Twitter today, actually. On the other poll question we have, who should the Saints lock up next? 33 votes already. Michael Thomas with the landslide, 73%. But we've got at Ryan underscore LA underscore sports saying the player whose contract is up after this year. He's saying Lattimore has 3 years left, so he wants Mike, then Kamara, then Lattimore. That's probably the logical
order, the way to go.
We've got Cajun Saint 88 again saying Mike, Kamara, and then Lattimore. And then I love it here at Kobe J. East saying all in capital letters. All. He wants to sign them all right now.
And another guy that they're going to have to pay that we don't have on the Twitter poll question in a couple years, Ramchek.
Yeah. What a steal there at the end.
That's a stud. Yeah. That's a stud right tackle. Yeah. Real quick before we close out hour number two here, the Louisiana Raging Cajuns softball team picked up some more terrific honors. They finished in the top 20 in both major college softball polls. USA Softball has them as a season-ending number 17 team. The other organization has them ranked number 18. It's the eighth consecutive top 20 finish for the Raging Cajun softball team, 12th consecutive season in the final polls, 27th overall finish in final polls, and the 100th consecutive appearance in the top 25 polls for Jerry Glasgow's program. So congratulations to the Raging Cajuns, ending the season ranked in the top 25 in both polls, and hopefully they can build up some momentum and have another tremendous season next year in 2020. That's going to do it for hour number two. Coming up, hour number three, we're going to be interviewing Kerry Joseph at 8:32. Stay tuned for that right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour here of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. We led off today's show talking about New Orleans Saints, Cam Jordan, the four-time Pro Bowler, two-time All-Pro edge rusher extraordinaire, and the heart of the Saints defense, receiving a contract extension worth more than $50 million, guaranteed just north of $40. They've locked him up now through the 2023 season. We also talked about who's going to be up next. You can vote on our 103.7 The Game Twitter poll question. Who should the Saints make a priority of signing up next, giving that contract extension to? Wide receiver Michael Thomas, running back Alvin Kamara, or cornerback Marshawn Lattimore? I say Michael Thomas, so does Cody, and so far so do the people of Acadiana, our listeners, and diehard Houdat fans. We also talked about the interesting story coming out of minicamp so far this week is that a South African rugby player who plays for the New Orleans rugby team, he's got himself a tryout with the ball club. He knows nothing about American football and is learning on the fly. You can also vote on that Twitter poll question, should the Saints sign him? Maybe have him on the practice squad. Have him on the scout team. Let him learn the game. If he's such a great natural athlete, hey, you can get that guy on the cheap. Why not? It's a minor investment that could pay off big dividends later. We also spent a good portion of the second hour breaking down LSU baseball. They've had two players that have announced that they are, in fact, transferring. They've put their names in the transfer portal. Brock Mathis, the catcher, he's gone. Will Ripple is now gone as well. Both of those guys are transferring out. And then we talked about what guys are coming back for this team with all the guys being leaving due to the draft or graduation. I think they're set with their pitchers. I think they're set with their rotation. If they can be healthy, they need to add. Not one, but two left-handed pitchers would be beneficial. But I think, you know, everyday roster, that's going to be the thing. They lose five everyday players, so they're going to have some guys. They're going to be set. Cody and I broke it down. 3, 4, and 5, they're going to be set with Garza, Beloso, okay, and Cabrera. They got the power hitters. They got the RBI guys. But they need some guys to step up like Gavin Dugas and DiGiacomo. They're going to have to step up and perform better at the plate. But right now, here in hour number 3, it's time to talk a little baseball. But the professional, the big leagues. Because you know 103.7 Game is the home of the Houston Astros. Reminder, Brewers at Astros, there at Minute Maid Park. You can listen to it live tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. Astro launch will start at 6:35. First pitch will be at 7:10, so this is how it's going to break down for you. The good brother Ben Love will host Bumper to Bumper Sports between 4 and 6 o'clock. And then from 6 to 7:10, there will be no Astro launch tonight. Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love will be from 4 to 6. Five Guys Stories and Lies, the award-winning Five Guys Stories and Lies, mind you, will be on from 6 to 7:10. They're going to lead you into first pitch for the Houston Astros versus the Milwaukee Brewers, Game 2 of that series. Game 1 was last night, and this is what the Astros did.
Barnes sets, letter high and deals. That's a line drive deep to left field. That ball is up, 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 and it is way gone. Oh,
smokes. Rob Chirinos with his 11th home run, a two-run shot, and that takes it to 10 for Astros. Rob Chirinos, take a bow. Oh, my heaven.
My heaven indeed. Led by Rob Chirinos blast there, the Astros would go on to win 10-8. The Astros now improve their record to 46-22 overall. They remain atop the standings in the American League West. Tremendous game there for the Astros. 10 runs off of 12 hits, no errors. They played a clean game. Bregman just keeps just chipping away, 1-3, scored a run. Drew two walks. That tells you everything you need to know about the kind of season Alex Bregman is having, because he's getting to the point now where he's drawing multiple walks. That means you are, in fact, an MVP candidate. Because it's going to get to the point where pitchers are going to be like, no. No, I'm not going to throw anything remotely around the plate area, because that guy's so good, the former LSU Tiger, that he's going to make me look bad. So, no, I'm not going to do that. Bregman, who's been manning short with Carrera being on the IL, went 1-for-3 last night. Michael Brantley, terrific free agent pickup. We've talked about it ad nauseum on this show. 2-for-4. Yuli Gurriel, he had himself a big night. 3-of-5. 2 runs scored, 3 ribbies. Alvarez, DH, 1-of-3 with 2 RBIs. And then we already talked about Robinson. That was his lone hit of the game. He went 1-for-4, but the 2-run blast. And even Tyler White, Mr. Versatility himself, got himself a hit. Plenty of run support there. Brad Peacock had himself a decent night out on the bump. He went 6 1/3. 4 runs, all earned on 7 hits. He only struck out 4. But the bullpen kind of carried the way. Will Harris, 2/3 of inning, no hit ball. Hector Rondon came in, gave up a run on 2 hits and 2/3 of inning. Ryan Pressly, 1/3, no hit. And then Davinsky came in and gave up 3 earned runs on 2 hits while striking out 3 in 1 inning of work. My man. Your job, you're only working 1 inning. Giving up 3 runs, not cool. Not cool. But despite Davinsky giving up runs left and right, the Astros still held on to win the game. The Astros had 4 2-run home runs in this game. 4. And once again, we've said this before. This team is first in the American League West. They're one of the best teams in the American League, and they're doing this all without Jose Altuve, their former league MVP, heart and soul of the team, on the IL. They're doing this without Springer Dinger himself, George Springer, on the IL, and Carlos Carrera, who was playing at an MVP level before he got injured. They're starting shortstop on the IL. 3 of the team's 4 best hitters are not in the lineup and haven't been for nearly a month combined. And they're still just mashing the hell out of the ball. They are just bruising opposing pitchers. Both Gurriel and White had big games. They beat up on Milwaukee's pitching staff. 4 2-run home runs and 7 extra base hits. That's just out-slugging another team. That's just flexing your muscles, and you have 3 of your best 4 hitters not in the lineup. Gurriel finished with 3 hits on the night, falling a triple shy of the cycle. In consecutive innings, both Gurriel and White each hit go-ahead 2-run home runs. Alvarez added a 2-run home run himself in the 5th. It was like a golf shot. He just picked it up out of the bottom of the strike zone and just chip-shotted that over the fence. He took that 2-2 changeup into the first row of the right field seats. Alvarez, by the way, is the first Astros player to hit a home run in each of his first two major league games, growing already astronomical expectations. Hey, I'm in the big leagues. I can hit home runs. Here I am. Nice to meet you. Learn how to spell my name. It's been something incredible, Alvarez said through an interpreter. Something so emotional I can't describe it, hitting two home runs in my first two games in the big leagues.
I want to say thank you to the Astros as well. Beat the Brewers again. I would much appreciate that.
As a diehard Chicago Cubs fan, you are very appreciative
very much
of when
so.
You see the Brew Crew lose.
Yeah, yes. The Brewers are, Brewers are a little too close for my liking. they're very good. Actually, the Brewers are still a half a game ahead of the Cubs in the NL Central. So there you go. Raymond, that should lead me directly into what you should expect coming. It's that time of the week again where we're going to play. How many games in first place are the Astros? They are in first place. They are still ahead of the Tejas Rangers.
Ooh, I like this game.
There's
like
your second-place team still. Last week when we did this, the Rangers were in second place. So the first two teams are still the Astros and the Rangers. How many games in first place are the Houston Astros?
9.5.
So very close. They're 9. If we're playing Price is Right, you lose because you went over.
Oh.
But boy, you were close. There are 9 games in first place. Let's see. They are 1/1000th of a percentage point in second place for the best record in baseball. The Twins still holding the best record in baseball.
And we were critical of the Astros earlier this season because they lost that series to Minnesota. And we're like, how are you losing to the Twins? We were wrong. The Twins are actually really good this year.
Twins are very, very, very good. So there are your updated standings for the AL West. The Astros, 46-22, 9 games ahead of the Tejas Rangers, who are in second place.
There we go. There we go. Big thank you from diehard Chicago Cubs fan, Cody Schutz.
A big thank you to the Houston Astros for winning that game last night. Need another win tonight, and maybe the Cubbies can slide back into first place.
There we go. Did your Cubbies end that slide that they had began in Houston?
They swept the Cardinals here recently. In their last 10 games, the Cubs are 6-4, so not great. But I think they just got a 3-game sweep of the Cardinals, so trending in the right direction.
Trending in the right direction. So the Astros outslugged the Brewers. And that's the thing. Last night, Peacock was not great. He went 6 3. He liked command on that breaking ball of his. And the Brewers bombed 3 extra base hits while he worked. 2 coming from Christian Yelich, who terrorized Peacock for most of the night. But he was also a triple shy of the cycle himself, Yelich was. But the Astros find a way, despite having 3 of their top 4 hitters on the IL, despite not having a great performance from their starting pitcher, they still find a way to beat a very good Milwaukee Brewers team. Once again, game 2 of this series, you can listen to it live tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. Bumper to Bumper Sports, 4-6, 5 Guys Stories and Lies, 6-7:10. The award-winning fellas every Wednesday night are going to take you right into First Pitch, 7:10, right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Cody Schutz is going to take things over. Woo, my man was amped up with all the Women's World Cup action that he got to see yesterday. He's going to tell us all about it when we come back.
It's probably going to be almost a little mini rant, if you will, because...
Oh, a mini rant?
Somehow, some way, this record-breaking 13-goal performance is being met with, I don't know what the word is, but Twitter not taking too kindly to this win. We'll get into it.
Trolls on Twitter, you say?
Not even trolls, I think. People that are legitimately being soft.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. Cody Schutz about to take over the show here, and I'm happy about it. Right here on 103.7 The Game.
Pushing it forward. Knocked ahead. Morgan, shot, goal.
Come on.
5 for Morgan. Tying the great Michelle Akers with a 5-goal performance.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting...
Nerd!
We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also, simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. We've talked a lot, New Orleans Saints giving Cam Jordan that contract extension. They got a South African rugby player trying out for the team. We talked LSU baseball, where they go from here, preparing for the summer and next year's fall season. Who needs to step up, who doesn't. We've touched on a lot of things, even Houston Astros baseball. But it's the time of the program today on this hump day edition of RP3 and Company to let my producer extraordinaire, the man who makes me sound at least borderline kind of competent.
Sort of.
On the air, sort of. Maybe on Tuesdays. Makes me sound good. My man loves some World Cup soccer.
Oh,
he bleeds it. He played soccer. He knows the sport. It's the beautiful game. Cody loves it. And my man was amped up yesterday because he got to see multiple games of the Women's World Cup, including Team USA. You were chanting, you were yelling, you were screaming in my office as they scored goal after goal after goal in a 13-0 performance versus poor Thailand.
It got to a point where Ray thought I was messing with him. Every time I was like, yes, all right, goal. And he's like, no, it's a joke, right? No, no, sir, it is not.
And every time they scored, there was not a single time during all those 13 goals that Cody Schutz did not lose enthusiasm. You would think after goal number 7, 8, or 9 that this man who bleeds red, white, and blue, like no one else that I know when it comes to soccer, that he would be like, oh, there's just another goal. It's getting out of hand. No, my man was as excited
all the way
for goal number 1 as he was for goal number 13. The floor is yours, my friend, about the Women's World Cup performance by Team USA. Take it.
Well, it's obvious. A record-breaking performance, 13-0. Most goals ever scored in a World Cup game. So that now record belongs to the U.S. I believe it belonged to Germany before that. Also, Alex Morgan, you heard the sound there. That was her fifth goal, the 12th goal of the game for the United States. Her fifth goal ties her for the record for most goals scored in one World Cup match. It was incredibly fun because it was the first game for the United States. They came out, and you want to make a statement. And a statement in soccer is usually 3-0, 4-0. That's a statement. 13-0 is putting everyone else on notice, letting the rest of the world know that we're not only here to win, but we're here to dominate, and we're here to put our stake in the ground and show that regardless if we have Hope Solo anymore, Abby Wambach, and these girls that everyone knows the names of, regardless if they're on the team or not, this United States women's national team is not going to take a second off when they play against you. And Raymond, there's only so much breaking down you can do of a 13-0 rout in a soccer game. But I do want to mention what I said before we went to break about how Twitter is very upset with this 13-0 win by the United States. Not so much upset with the score being 13-0, because if you don't understand, there is goal differential. It probably won't come up because the U.S. is pretty dominant, but goal differential is the first tiebreaker when it comes to the World Cup and moving on into the next rounds of things. So scoring 13 goals in a game, you could possibly, in theory, need that. So a lot of the complaints aren't for scoring 13 goals. The complaints are for the celebrations that happened after the goal, how the United States is celebrating goal number 10, goal number 11, 12, 13. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of people on Twitter and online in general complaining about that. And I just want to say, shut up. Like, stop taking away fun from, like, the argument is
get them, bro.
You
get
feel
them.
Bad for Thailand because Thailand is obviously an inferior opponent to the United States in that game yesterday. That is unquestionable. Nobody's going to say that's not the case. But you have to look at it this way. This World Cup is the highest, unquestionable, the top of the mountain when it comes to professional women's soccer in the entire world. It does not get bigger than this stage. Some of these girls on the United States soccer team are playing in their first World Cup. Some of them are playing in their last World Cup. And don't you for one second think that it's okay for you to tell them not to celebrate, not to have a good time, and celebrate their accomplishments and their achievements on the biggest stage in the world for their platform, for what they do. That's not hyperbole. This is the biggest stage in the world for what they do. And for you to tell them not to have fun because the other team sucks, That makes you suck. So like, I'm not trying to, you know, hopefully there's not too many people right now that I'm talking directly to. I don't think there is because I see it on Twitter and it bothers me. It gets under my skin for you to, you know, yes, we feel bad for Thailand. Maybe they, you know, but it's the World Cup. Thailand made it to the World Cup. Not every country plays in this tournament. So in order to make it to this tournament, you had to have won something. You qualified some sort of way. Just because you got run out of the building when you got here, don't pick on or say that the team that won it should be embarrassed and the fans of that team should be embarrassed because of the way they acted. No, you can't take that away from these girls, these women. Some are in their first, some are in their last World Cup. And if you don't want them to celebrate, then you can just get out. And that's my feelings on that right there. And I'm sorry, I hope USA comes out and scores 20 goals next time.
My man. My man. I'm a proud papa right now. I'm a proud papa.
Just a little mini rant. Just a little mini
proud
rant.
Proud papa.
Just a mini rant. But it's serious, though. I mean, what are your thoughts on now, they're not celebrating throwing confetti in the air, but they're jumping up and down and they're hugging each other after the 12th goal, the 13th goal.
There is a difference. Soccer is different. Okay? They're just going through their game plan here.
And you can only sub three times in a game. You can't take everyone out. You're only allowed three subs.
It's not American football where you're up by 30 points and you're throwing on first down, going four wide.
Right.
Okay, with 2 minutes to go. Okay, that's not what we're doing here. They have to go the whole length of the field.
Yeah.
It's not Team USA's problem that Thailand is just awful.
And what do you want them to do? Kick the ball into the back of the net and then just turn around and somberly walk back to midfield?
Or just come up to the goal and just stop and just leave the ball there and then turn back around?
Yeah, no.
No, come on now.
You're soft if you think that.
People are soft. When we come back, we'll talk to someone who isn't soft. I can assure you of that. As we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on a big-time guest, Kerry Joseph, former Nish and McNeese State star, joining us. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber. That's 133 and 1133 in high definition. Reminder, go to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. We got not one but two poll questions concerning the New Orleans Saints that we need your votes for. We'll update that before we close out today's show. Right now, though, it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our next guest. He is a New Iberia native, one of the best to ever put on the pads for New Iberia Senior High School, as his jersey has been since retired there with the Yellow Jackets. He's in the McNeese State Hall of Fame and the Southland Conference Hall of Honor after he led the Cowboys to not one, not two, but three Southland Conference championships. He was also named Southland Conference Player of the Year, and he helped lead McNeese State to its first ever playoff win and its first trip to the national semifinals. He would go on to play in the Canadian Football League, where he would earn most outstanding player honors in 2007 after he helped guide the Saskatchewan Rough Riders to win the 95th Grey Cup. He also passed for more than 4,000 yards and scored 37 total touchdowns in that season. After spending 3 years on the staff at his alma mater, McNeese State, he begins his first season as the running back coach and passing game coordinator at Southeastern Louisiana. It's our privilege to welcome to the program the one and only Kerry Joseph. Kerry, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing great. How's it going?
It's going great. It's going great. I appreciate you making some time for us. I know it's a little bit of a lull right now in the college game, so to speak, but you'll be gearing up pretty soon for fall camp there with the Lions in Hammond. But I want to just touch on everything, your career, storied career. I want to talk about the latest honor that you've picked up that was announced over the weekend, and then about how excited you are about your new opportunity and your new career here at Southeastern. So, Kerry, let's go back. Did you ever think when you were growing up there in New Iberia and you ended up playing there for Nish that we'd be talking about you still being involved in football and receiving all these honors more than two decades later?
To be honest with you, no. You know, growing up as a kid, in New Iberia, it was just about playing sports. You never knew where it was going to take you. But I know I was always involved in sports. Even, you know, once you're in high school, you never know if you have the opportunity to play college. You have a desire and you have a dream, you have a passion for it, but you just never know how it's going to turn out. And just to be where I am today and the blessings that I've been able to receive, the accomplishments, it's something that I would have never thought, as a growing up, as a young kid.
We're talking with Kerry Joseph, Nice State Hall of Famer and former CFL Most Outstanding Player here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Kerry, you know, you weren't the prototypical size of a quarterback coming out of high school, but that didn't prevent you from just setting the world on fire once you got to Nice State. Walk us through that process when you were coming out of high school being recruited. How many teams were recruiting you, and why did you settle on going to Nice State and becoming a Cowboy?
You know, I got recruited coming out of high school, and you said it the right way. A lot of people felt that I couldn't play quarterback at the next level, that, you know, being an athlete playing other positions. But I was recruited by Northwestern State as a quarterback, Southern University, of course, McNeese, Nicholls State. But then also I had schools like Tulane that wanted me to play defensive back. UL Lafayette, actually, which was USL at the time, wanted me to come in as a punter and as an athlete. And McNeese was the one I chose. But when people told me that I wasn't going to be able to play quarterback in college, I used that as a driving tool for me. I was very determined to prove people wrong and to make a point that I could, that I can play at that level, in the college level. And I chose McNeese. It was a great place to visit. It felt like home. And I think part of it was, Coach Bobby Kiesler, who is from New Iberia, was running that show. And just the coaching staff and just the opportunity of where that program was going, I felt comfortable of making that decision. My family, my mom and my dad, they knew Coach Kiesler well, and they just felt comfortable with that situation. And it worked out for me in a great way.
We're talking with former CFL Most Outstanding Player and Nice State Hall of Famer from New Iberia, Kerry Joseph, right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Kerry, you get to McNeese. You guys have an unprecedented amount of success in your time there as a starting quarterback. You helped lead the Cowboys to multiple Southland Conference championships and then their first ever playoff win and trip to the semifinals. As you reflect back on that now, that's a lot of accomplishments in a short period of time. Most guys are lucky to even get to the playoffs at that level and even share a conference championship. You won multiple championships, and you're now forever going to be linked into that program's history as being the quarterback for the first team to win a playoff game and the first team to get to the national semifinals. What are some of your fondest memories from that time?
You know what, just going into that, man, like I said, going into Magnus, we had a lot of talent. I thought the coaches, Coach Kiesler and those guys, did a great job of recruiting. And just going into there, once again, not knowing what's going to happen as an athlete, going into the college atmosphere, getting redshirted my first year, and just going and just developing as a quarterback. I was a young man, felt that I wanted to play right away, but not knowing that I needed that time to develop. And, Coach Kiesler taught me about the word patience and how to be patient and how to work and be ready for your opportunity. And when I got my opportunity, my redshirt freshman year, about 3-4 games in, I never looked back, and I was determined to help lead my guys. Once I got that opportunity, it always stuck in my head that people say I couldn't do it, and I never wanted them to win. So my driving point was to always work hard and to do the things I need to do to be a leader, not just on the football field but off the football field. And, we had a lot of success there as a football team. We had some great players. I had great players around me. And then, I never realized until I left and start talking like, you actually won 40 games as a starter at McNeese. And you look back and reflect on the first playoff game in McNeese history, going to the semifinals and going undefeated in 1995 and making it all the way to the semifinals. You look back on those accomplishments, you just kind of sit back and say, wow, where did the time go? But it's memories that's etched in our minds forever.
We're talking with Kerry Joseph, Nice State Hall of Famer, former Nish Yellow Jacket star here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Kerry, you know, just like it was you coming out of high school being a little undersized, despite rewriting the record books there as a passer, all the unprecedented amount of success you had there with the Cowboys, you come out, you get you go undrafted, and you originally get signed as an undrafted free agent in 96 by the Cincinnati Bengals, where you were the third-string quarterback. Then you went over to NFL Europe as a quarterback. But then you started making the switch where the NFL teams and the pro leagues wanted you as a non-quarterback. The Redskins signed you as a tailback. And then you went over to NFL Europe, played for the Rain Fire. You were a safety. You helped them win a World Bowl championship. Let's talk about that. What was that experience like playing NFL Europe and ended up winning it all in that league?
You know what? That was a great experience for me. It's a league that I'm grateful and thankful that it was around, you know, because you look at it, I might have not had the career I had. So I truly think my plan was laid out, you know. As a true Christian, I think God had a plan for me. I didn't understand it at the time, but, you know, having to switch positions and play quarterback for a year, go to running back, go to NFL Europe, but that gave me my niche of saying, hey, you got a chance to continue your professional career. And I'm thankful I had the opportunity. You know, some guys, it's quarterback or nothing. But, you know, as being an athlete and being able to make that transition gave me another 4 years in the NFL, allowed me to get my retirement. But it was great football also in NFL Europe. You know, at that time, that league was really thriving, and it was a lot of hungry guys that wanted to showcase what they can do. And it gave me a chance as a safety to go become a star, to win a World Bowl, and then get signed by Seattle. So everything kind of lined up for me. When I look back at my life, everything has lined up for me as a player and as a coach.
We're talking with Kerry Joseph, former CFL Most Outstanding Player and Mini State Hall of Famer here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Kerry, you win the World Bowl championship in NFL Europe. That sets up an opportunity with the Seattle Seahawks where you played safety for four seasons. During that time, you know, you hadn't played as a quarterback in quite a long time, yet you find your way to the Canadian Football League after your time is done with the Seattle Seahawks, and you throw your first CFL touchdown pass against Calgary as a member of the Ottawa team. During that time where you were playing in NFL Europe and then playing in the NFL, did you give up all hope that you would play quarterback again, or did you still in the back of your mind thought, hey, if I just get an opportunity, I could play quarterback again?
To be honest, once I got into Seattle and started playing safety, I pretty much had turned it off that I would play quarterback as a professional athlete. I figured I was going to make a career on the defensive side of football. And I felt in my heart that I still could play it, but I just wasn't going to get the opportunity. But then that opportunity came knocking in the CFL. And, you know, it was just a great opportunity for me. You know, I was out of football for a year after I got released from Seattle in the spring of 2002. And, you know, coached over at St. Thomas More in that fall of 2002, helped those guys out. And then the call came for me from Ottawa, from the general manager, a guy, Eric Tillman, from Mississippi. He's an Ole Miss guy and called me. And, you know, he remembered me coming out of McNeese because, you know, people had kind of, you know, tried to touch me to go up there to Canada straight out of college. But I wanted to go the NFL route. So when that call came, I knew I had an opportunity to go back and play quarterback. And, you know, and I still had that hunger and that desire to play the game. So I made sure I jumped on that opportunity, and I knew it had been like 6 or 7 years since I really had been behind the center, you know, spinning the ball and throwing it down the field. But I felt that I had an advantage, and I felt that advantage was I had played defense for 4 years, so I had a better understanding of what a defense was trying to do to an offense.
Kerry, you hit the ground running there in the CFL in 2005. You became just one of three players in league history to exceed 4,000 yards passing, where you nearly threw for 4,500 yards and 1,000 yards rushing in a season. You did that in 2005, and then you just built up that momentum, kept it going. Let's go to 2007, brother, because that year you were sensational. You rushed for 13 touchdowns. That was the second most by a QB in a single season in CFL history. And that same year, You were named the CFL's most outstanding player for passing for more than 4,000 yards, scoring 37 total touchdowns as you helped lead the Rough Riders to a Grey Cup championship, their first in a generation, and you became the first Rough Rider to win the Outstanding Player Award since 1976. Walk me through that. Did you guys know you had something special that season?
We did. You know, we was coming off the 2006 season under Coach Danny Barrett and our GM, Roy Shivers. You know, those guys had put a great team together with a lot of football talent. And we took that team and we lost in the Western Finals against British Columbia, B.C., at their place. And so we knew we had something special. We had a lot of guys coming back. We wasn't going to lose a lot of guys in free agency. And then we fast forward to the same guy, Eric Tillman, that signed me in Ottawa from the, you know, once I was out of football. Now is the GM in Saskatchewan going into 2007, and he brings on board another Ole Miss guy and Kent Austin, who was a great quarterback at in Saskatchewan. Is in the Plaza of Honor already as the head coach. So we knew we was building something special going into that season, and just the attitude and the mentality that Kent and the staff brought, we felt that we had a chance to make a run at it. And, you know, and going into that season, and when you rewind back into 2006, for me, I remember the pain that we had in the Western Finals. I told one of our defensive ends, Fred Perry, I said, we're coming back next year, and we're going to win it. I promise you. I took that those words into my off-season training, and I never stopped. And I was determined not to let my teammates down. And I think a lot of us had that desire coming back in 07, and from there, we felt that as a team, we couldn't be beat, and we're supposed to win every game. And you saw it as we went through the season, the confidence grew, and we felt that, hey, we was going back into BC, and we did, and we won that game and, you know, and punched our ticket to the Grey Cup.
Kerry, what was that like, winning the Grey Cup championship and winning the league's highest honor, being named most outstanding player, especially for a guy who went undrafted and many people thought couldn't play quarterback?
You know what? It was a great, great, great feeling. You know, you don't get a chance. It's hard to get to those championship levels. NFL, CFL, NBA, it doesn't matter what you do. It's hard to win. And to be able to accomplish that for myself, number one, was just a great feeling. But also to be able to accomplish it for other teammates who had been fighting for that same accomplishment but always came up short. Those moments right there, even the MVP, which is the MOP up there, the most outstanding player, that was part of my team. I didn't win that on my own because I had great players around me to allow me to put up the numbers and have the success that I had. But also now it's a great cup to be able to share that moment, to share that stage with those men that you battled so long for, which is a great accomplishment.
We're talking with Kerry Joseph here, former CFL Most Outstanding Player, Mini State Hall of Famer on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Kerry, I want to talk about the latest honor that you're going to be receiving. You've already been inducted into the Mini State Sports Hall of Fame and the Southland Hall of Honor. You've had your jersey retired at New Iberia Senior High, and now you're going to be inducted into the Rough Riders Hall of Honor. That was announced over the weekend. Your thoughts on having your name engraved with some of the best to ever do it there for one of the CFL's best franchises?
No, I look at that. That's just, it goes on with, along with that word, legacy. I feel that when you walk away from this game of football, when you walk away from life, it's all about what legacy did you leave, not just on the field and off the field. And I think that helps to put a stamp on the legacy that I'm building as a person and as a human being, as a Christian, and to be able to get that call and to go in with great men that played the game in Saskatchewan before me, or alongside of me, it's a tremendous honor. I know they hold that honor to the highest standard in the province of Saskatchewan, and you know I know my name will be forever, you know, etched in the Saskatchewan Rough Riders history.
Kerry, real quick before we let you go, man, and I appreciate you making the time for us. You know, you spent the last 3 years coaching at your alma mater. They went with a coaching change. You've ended up landing on your feet, though, quickly. in the same conference, brother. You're going to be there at Southeastern Louisiana as the running backs coach and passing game coordinator this coming season. How excited are you about continuing on your coaching career and remaining in the Southland Conference?
I'm very excited about it. You know, when it's a tough business, and when you got a job, you embrace it. You embrace the opportunity to coach young men and to teach them how to play the game and how to be a young man, how to go, how to prepare for life from the first time they step on campus to the time they leave campus. So I'm excited about it. And, you know, and I'm excited. I get to go back to my niece for the first time. I never thought I would actually cheer against the Cowboys. But unfortunately, I have to now. So, but I still have a lot of love for my niece, and just being in the same conference is going to be great. And I got some great young men that I'm working with here as a running back coach, and some great coaches I'm coaching with. So it's good. You know what? Anytime you can impact and embrace young men with the game of football, I always reflect back to what they did for me. And now, like I said, I understand why I had to play all those different positions, because now my coaching experience is tremendous, because I've been on both sides of the football.
Kerry, congratulations on the new gig. Congratulations on being inducted into the Rough Riders Ring of Hall of Honor. And I appreciate you making time for us, brother. Best of luck to you moving forward.
All right. Thank you, guys. Good talking to you all.
That's Kerry Joseph, former NISH star, meaning State Hall of Famer and CFL Most Outstanding Player. Great Cup champion to boot, joining us here on RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show right here on 103.7 The Game. Tremendous hump day edition of RP3 and Company in the books. That's going to do it. Tomorrow, James Yasko, Les East, John Marques will join us. Make sure to tune in 6 to 9 tomorrow right here on 103.7 The Game.